me. Ooh-wee, it's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along.
Ow. What did you say, nigga?
Y'all, fuck that shit, man. Yo, it's Thursday night. Be prepared to get your ear holes swabbed with massive quantities of caramelized knowledge. You know what I'm saying? We're going to be bringing the street corner to your ear. Yo, 9 to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We are live every motherfucking week, unless I'm overdosed on burgers or some shit. But yo, Nestor Rodriguez, your host, a.k.a. Nestorius, and my main man, my right-hand man, the ginger.
The ginger with the flinger.
The ginger with the flinger. My man, Richard, Rich Corbin. What's up, Bob?
Fresh.
Fling. We're just bugging out on that shit coming up on the elevator.
That shit is fresh.
Anyway, if you're listening live, it's 800-893-9562. I like to just say that right up front. 800-893-9562. If it's your first time listening to the show, welcome. If you're a repeat offender, you know most likely you're downloading it. You've subscribed to the show. But if you are at home Thursday night, you have no food in the refrigerator. Your life has come down to this. You ain't got nothing to do with your life. You can watch us live. We have a video feed as well as an audio feed, and you can call in 800-893-9562. Anyway, today, yo, we're going to kick this shit right off the bat. You know, I wanted to talk about you know, a couple of years ago it became evident that the government was phasing out incandescent light bulbs, right?
Right.
And I was like, what the fuck? Why don't you, like, phase out retardation? You know what I mean? Why don't you phase out, you know, extreme right motherfuckers or extreme left motherfuckers, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you phase out poverty? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Why don't you phase out stupid fucks that can't drive in Los Angeles when it's raining?
Dude, then everybody would be fucking...
Phase them all out!
There'd be like 10 people left.
Phase them out, though. I mean, why? I mean, so, as you know, as my man Rich knows me, you know, better than, I mean, we spent a lot of time. I know you, you know me, yeah. You know, as Rich would know, I'm a creature of habit and I'm old school. Like, I like my toast buttered. You know what I'm saying? You know, I don't need you to come into my house.
You don't need that soy butter on there. Yeah. You want real butter.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
don't need no newfangled butter yeah. made from a camel's ass.
Exactly. No. I don't need a thrice massaged, anal lubed new version of butter. I like my old shit. It was fine. It worked good. It tastes good. I don't need you to come into the neighborhood trying to sell me some new reinvented shit
right.
or trying to fix a problem that was never broken in the first
place. I remember, though, a couple years ago when you heard about this, you were upset.
Well, because
you were upset because it was like, oh, what the fuck? These new light bulbs suck. They don't look very good.
Well,
you know, and they didn't.
Well, here's the deal. You live your life and you're conditioned to thinking and feeling and, you know, having things a certain way,
right?
Then somebody comes along and says, actually, you know, I have a product, right? I have an app, let's say, mm-hmm. that can control this or that or, you know, I have a new, what do you call it? Ingredient that will make your cake taste better, mm-hmm. right? But then... all that is still an option that you get to decide.
Right.
Right? So I can keep my old way of making my cake, Or I can try this new fucking, you know, additive and see what's up. The problem with living in a free world and in a democracy like the United States is that I don't need the government telling me what I can and cannot fucking buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? And I don't need the government fucking phasing something out that was fucking perfectly fine.
Right.
So I thought, let's talk about this shit. So first of all, let's break it down. So most of you guys may or may not know the differences between a compact fluorescent lamp and a light emitting diode lamp. When I say lamp, I mean a bulb, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, an incandescent bulb is basically two wires that electricity passes through, and there's a resistor that absorbs the electricity, for lack of a better way of putting it, and that resistor glows and it gives off light. That's what that's the light you have. And depending on the resistance in that resistor, it's usually depending on the resistance on that resistor, and I'll explain that in a minute, will give you more or less light, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the more of a resistor, the less light, right? Because Rich is the electronic motherfucker. I could be wrong on this, but
well, here's the thing.
But
if there's more resistance, then
it's gonna glow more because it's gonna get hotter.
Right.
So it's the opposite. It's the opposite of what I just said. Because resistance absorbs electricity and it's gonna glow more. So in many, many cases, if not all cases of incandescent bulbs, it's nichrome that they use in there, which is the same resistor that's in your toaster or your toaster oven. When the electricity goes through it, it glows, and the more it glows, the hotter it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And so it toasts your toast. Like I was introducing
in the butter on the toast.
Right. Fresh. Which I like my motherfucking butter melted on my toast. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you listen to one of my earlier episodes, you'll know that I love cheeseburgers, right? We're going to go all over the place here, but we're going to keep right on track. I love cheeseburgers. I hate fucking going into a place, ordering a cheeseburger, and asking for a burger medium rare, and they're telling me, no, we can't do that. Why can't you fucking do that?
Fuck you, Umami Burger.
No, why can't you do that? Oh, because, you know, you might get salmonella. How about if I want salmonella? Again, we're in America. I should be able to buy whatever the fuck I want to buy without somebody regulating, you know, what's going on. And so the topic of this show, I'm going to go off again because I'm really fucking pissed off about this light bulb shit. The topic of it is I don't want my government telling me what I can and cannot buy. End of story. So compact fluorescent lamps, if you remember, back in the day, these have been going on, I don't know the statistic, maybe 20 years, 15 years, I don't know, because I blow my nose, 10 years go by. I don't even know how fucking...
Right.
Anyway.
So CFLs have been around a while, but here's the thing. When they first came out, they were shitty. Like, they would catch on fire, they would turn yellow at the base because they would get really hot, you know?
Well, at the base of the fluorescent light is a transformer, right? So it takes you 120.
And a ballast and all that stuff, right?
And what's in there? Well, let me read what the definition. Yeah. I can give you my. So a compact fluorescent lamp, a CFL, also called a compact fluorescent light, energy saving light, and a compact fluorescent tube, is a fluorescent lamp designed to replace an incandescent lamp. Now, I already told you what an incandescent lamp was. Some types fit into light fixtures formerly used for incandescent lamps. The lamps use a tube, which is curved or folded to fit into the space of an incandescent bulb. And a compact electronic ballast, like Richard mentioned, or a transformer that transforms 120 to, you know, either a higher voltage or a low voltage. In this case, I would believe it's a higher voltage, right? It steps it up in the ballast, like to light up the fluorescent. Anyway, in the base of the lamp.
However much voltage it needs, you know.
Right. Compared to a general service incandescent, to general service incandescent lamps, giving the same amount of visible light, CFLs use 1/5 to 1/3 the electric power and last 8 to 15 times longer. A CFL has a higher purchase price than an incandescent lamp, but can save over 5 times its purchase price in electricity costs over the lamp's lifetime. Like all fluorescent lamps, CFLs contain toxic mercury, which complicates their disposal. In many countries, governments have established recycling schemes for CFLs and glass generally. So just remember that right there. We're going to get back to that. Toxic mercury. Okay? So on one hand, you have incandescent bulbs that were perfectly fucking fine, according to Uncle Ness. Okay? There was nothing wrong with those fucking bulbs. But yet the government, and in this case, were the Democrats that passed this fucking the bill. Hold on a second. What's the name of that bill? The 2007 Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007, right? Like, I didn't know my fucking bulbs posed a security threat. You know what I mean? So, so they spent, I was trying to find out how many billions of fucking tax dollars went into this thing. But ironically enough, the bill was passed unanimously in Congress in 2007.
Right.
You know, and I don't know what the demographics of whether the majority of the House was Republican or Democrat, but it passed.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so in 2007, this Energy Independence and Security Act was passed, dictating that starting on January 1st, 2012, the incandescent bulbs were being phased out, and they were going to be replaced with more energy efficient, cost effective CFLs, not really, but compact. A light emitting diode, LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to this, compact fluorescent bulbs were already in place. But as you can tell, like Rich was saying, some of them caught on fire early on. But the disposal is the big issue with
right.
fluorescent tubes.
Mm-hmm.
There's mercury inside them. And if you've ever had a welfare Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker lightsaber fights with those big long ass fluorescent bulbs, you'll know that once you crack your opponent in the fucking shoulder or the necks and they explode, white powder goes all over the place. Well, that shit is very toxic.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you grew up in the projects like I did, you know, we you know, the only thing that was missing was them glowing and the but we used to crack them over each other's head, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was not uncommon to be walking down the street finding a bunch of those long stick fluorescent tubes, right? And just fucking get into an impromptu fight.
Oh, man.
And just
that
crack
was like
somebody
gold.
In there.
Yeah. You just came across some.
Exactly.
You know,
so,
15 minutes of,
exactly.
of fun you will never you
exactly.
will never forget.
You will never get back. That's right. So a light emitting diode, LED, is a two lead semiconductor light source. And it is a PN junction diode. I'm going to get Rich to break this down kind of easily and user friendly. But let me just finish the definition, which emits light when activated. So when a suitable voltage is applied to the leads, electrons are able to recombine with electron holes within the device, releasing energy in the form of photons. This effect is called electroluminescence, and the color of the light corresponding to the energy of the photon is determined by the energy band gap of the semiconductor. An LED is often small in area, less than 1 millimeter to the second power, whatever the fuck that is. That's like, oh man, that's not enough more. Yo, that's not enough coke, man. Let me get another one. Sorry, just a little gram. Anyway, I just made a fucking coke reference in a very inappropriate place that has nothing to do with it. So scratch that. Let me go back. An LED is often small in area, less than 1 millimeter to the second power, and integrated optical components may be used to shape its radiation pattern. Basically, instead of a resistor like the incandescent bulb or a gas or mercury inside of a fluorescent tube,
uh-huh.
a light-emitting diode is, what's the difference between a diode and a resistor? A diode, I guess, would be a form of a resistor, right? But it's a specific type?
Not really. A diode is, you know, it's silicone,
It absorbs the electricity and it gives off.
A resistor is material that electricity passes through
and absorbs.
Electricity can pass through it, but it doesn't pass through it easily.
And all of the input electricity does not come out. It basically absorbs.
It absorbs it through heat or,
right.
you know.
And it dissipates it through heat, yeah.
Yeah, generally.
Yeah. So in other words, if you take a positive and a negative wire and you put it together, you short it out, you'll see a big spark, and then the breaker will pop.
Mm-hmm.
and you'll have to reset the breaker. If you have a resistor, as we mentioned before, an incandescent bulb between the positive and the negative, you know, a piece of nichrome, it's not going to short out. The resistance, the nichrome, is going to absorb the electricity. It's going to glow, and the remaining electricity is going to go through and go back to the complete the circuit.
Yeah, it's not,
Anyway.
And that energy is transferred to heat.
So the diode, we're not going to get into scientific fucking thing because it's a little more complicated. But the point is this. My whole thing is, so how much energy does this save, right? How much energy does this shit save, all right? You asked me, didn't you? Yes, you did. All right. So the let me see. So general service incandescent lamps, I would have to go into lumens and all that shit. I'm not going to get into all that shit.
That's very confusing. That's confusing. I went to go buy some fucking LED bulbs because, you know, the prices are coming down.
Okay, here we go.
And it's all in lumens. Let me read this thing about CFL bulbs.
Compact fluorescence.
Yeah, and their mercury content.
Please.
So I looked at this thing, and it says CFLs typically contain from 3 to 5 milligrams of mercury, about 1/100th of the mercury content of the older thermostats that may be still found in some homes. Researchers have found that only a tiny fraction of that is actually released when bulbs break.
Right.
For example, a study published in 2011 in Journal Environmental Engineering Science, Jackson State University researchers, Yadong Li and Lee Jin, now they're Asian, so you know this shit is true because they're tight on this shit. They reported that even if let unattended for 24 hours, a broken bulb will release from 0.04 to 0.7 milligrams of mercury. The researchers found that it would take weeks for the amount of mercury vapor in the room to reach levels that would be hazardous to a child. That's just, you know, from one,
right.
You know, breaking.
Right.
So, you know, there is mercury in it.
What was the original number that you up in it? It said it releases what?
It releases 0.04 to 0.7 milligrams of mercury.
Right,
if a bulb breaks.
Right, that's enough mercury to keep a black and Latino kid in the projects eating Doritos for breakfast for about 15 years. It's like enough mercury. What the fuck is enough mercury that's okay for a child? There shouldn't be mercury in a bulb. End of story. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And here's the other thing. Horowitz from the guy who's suggesting this from the Environmental Protection Agency, he says, when your CFL stops working, put it in a Ziploc bag and take it to a Home Depot or Lowe's who will recycle it for you for free.
Right.
Okay.
The problem with that is that you can't even play Star Wars with those. I mean, it'd be cool if you could take those.
There's a lot of mercury in the tubes.
Oh, in the tubes, there's a lot more mercury. Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. There's a lot more mercury in those tubes. I'm saying it's a shame that you can't use those as like lightsaber grenades. You know, the little compact fluorescents.
Yeah.
And just throw them in like a boosh, have them blow up. You know what I mean? In order to prevent those things from breaking, they started encapsulating those compact fluorescents in a plastic shell that looked like an incandescent bulb.
I just screwed one in today.
Right.
I just put one in today.
So let me look at what the actual over the year, right, operating cost per bulb is. All right.
Uh-huh.
So a traditional incandescent bulb, a traditional one, let's say that's going to be a 65-watt incandescent bulb. It's going to cost you about $4.80 for the whole year to operate.
Is that 8 hours a day?
Who the fuck
every
knows
day?
How they get these statistics, man? So I'm going to get to that. So a halogen incandescent bulb, which we didn't get into, a halogen incandescent bulb.
Yeah.
A halogen is... It's a bigger housing, and it usually has a ceramic base, but the actual little bulb is contained. The nichrome is contained inside of a little bulb within a bigger bulb, and it emits sharper light, and it consumes less power.
And that's because it's in a certain type of gas?
No. There's no gas in there. It's just, you've seen them. They're like really thick.
Yeah.
They look like small floodlights. But inside, there's like a smaller bulb type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They get hot. That's all I know.
They get really fucking
really
hot.
So those are about $350 a year. Then this is per bulb.
$3.50 a year?
To operate, you know.
Okay, so that's a little less.
Right. So now the Energy Star compact fluorescent light is $1.20 to operate a year.
Okay.
Now keep in mind that, and then I'll get into the what the Energy Star LEDs. Well, the Energy Star LEDs, the light emitting diode lamps, are $1 a year to operate. Okay. Now, the attractiveness to these compact fluorescents and LEDs is that the initial investment, meaning what it costs to buy one of these bulbs, is a lot more than an incandescent bulb. An incandescent bulb can cost you, you know, between $50 to $1, depending on, like, if you get like the ones that only work once, those are about 50 cents, like the ones you get in Mexico. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, no. I mean, obviously, you guys know how much the fucking incandescent bulb, a four pack will probably cost you like $4 or $3 or right, whatever the fuck it is. Or if you buy them in bulk, they cost a little less.
Mm-hmm.
The Energy Star compact fluorescents would cost you a couple of dollars each, so probably twice as much
right,
as a regular incandescent. An LED can cost you as much as four or five times as much. You know, anywhere between, when they first came out, they were like fucking $20 a bulb.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And now they've gone down in price a little bit.
They have. They've gone down dramatically.
Right.
The last time I was looking at them, they were like less than $10 a bulb for a right, 60 watt.
Right. Well, that's not
you
bad.
You can go to Fry's. Right. I got a really good one, you yeah, know, well, for like $10.
Well, here's the deal. Here's the deal. So they cost more money, but the principle is that they use way much less power and give off a lot more light.
Mm-hmm.
Now, LEDs, can they be dimmed? So here's the other yes, issue. Compact fluorescent lights could not be dimmed. Because
until recently, the past couple of years, you can get dimmable CFLs.
They made dimmable ones. Okay, yeah. So the incandescent bulb, again, the nichrome wire absorbs the electricity. So when you dim it, you're basically reducing the amount of electricity, the current that's going through the positive and being absorbed through the nichrome and then going back. And so that's what makes
you're using a different resistor. You're right, using a potentiometer right, in the wall.
The source. You're right, cutting it at the source.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing is this. So this is for 60 watt replacement bulbs based on 2 hours a day of usage, shown in U.S. dollars. So $4.80 for incandescent, $3.50 halogen incandescent, $1.20 Energy Star CFL, and $1 Energy Star LED. So my thing is this, man. It's like the reason where, you know, I guess the government wants to come in and step in and say we're going to phase these out. And we're going to replace them with these higher energy efficient bulbs. It'll save on electricity. And I forgot what else they were saying that it would save.
Carbon footprint.
Exactly.
If you're saving on electricity, it's less coal or it's less whatever they have to use right, to make electricity.
Right.
So the less electricity mm-hmm, that you use in general, the less carbon footprint you're going right, to leave.
Well, let Uncle Ness fill you in on something. The more you shut your fucking lights off when they're not in use.
That's the biggest culprit.
That's really absolutely, the fucking issue. The more you shut your fucking lights off when they're not being used, the more money you save, the more energy you're fucking conserving, and the less of a carbon footprint you're putting out there. So it yeah, comes back down to this, right? The issue is not the bulb. The issue is the education of the fucking retards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just people. We're talking about businesses. I just came
right,
from Palm Springs. How many times do you walk by an office building and it's daytime and the fucking bulbs are on, the mm-hmm, lights are on?
Yeah.
It's like, that's really the issue. You know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah, if they really wanted to make a difference, and instead of, you know, remember LADWP sent out like free CFLs.
Yeah,
you know, I got a couple of those.
LA Department of Water and Power, yeah, they're our local Con Edison and power company.
So they sent out free CFLs. Oh, great. Awesome. One of them like burned up on me or whatever. They were like, they're shitty cheap ones. But anyway,
yes,
so they sent these out. But if they really want to make a difference, fucking come in and replace your light switch with a motion sensor light switch in your bathroom.
If you want to do
that.
No,
that's the best way of doing
yeah,
it.
If you want to do it.
Give you the option to do it.
Train yourself to turn the fucking light off when you're not in the room. It's that simple.
People are lazy. They just want to, they want to get back
to
Matlock.
That's the problem.
They want to get back to Matlock to find out, you know.
Well, that's the problem. It's like the reason all these public bathrooms now have these fucking lightsaber censored, you know, faucets. It's like, now I soak myself up and I don't know what, you know, I'm passing my hand, waving it, and no water's coming out, right?
That's because somebody flicked a booger on the sensor.
No, it's just fucking bullshit. Or the ones before that, you used to press a knob or a push button, and then the water just keeps coming out whether you need it or not.
Right.
Right? As opposed to, if you listen to one of our other episodes about conserving water, just fucking turning the water on, using it, turning it off, and it's that simple. But people are irresponsible, man. It all comes down to irresponsibility. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just irresponsibility.
But, you know, you're not going to train everybody anymore. I mean, they've pretty much trained them. You know, they just people got lazy.
Yeah.
They just stopped caring.
Yeah. I'm going to give a quick big up. I was reading this article because we just like bitched up a lot, man. I got to give a big up here, man. Big the fuck up, you bomba clad pussy clad life-saving motherfucker. Anyway, I want to give a big up to this dude, J.C. Huizenga. Now this is pretty wild, okay?
Yeah.
J.C. Huizenga, all right? Let me find out. Homeboy J.C. Huizenga bought JR Automation Technologies in 95, right? The company had annual revenues of $14 million and less than 100 employees. That's 95. Two decades later, the Holland-based manufacturer of custom automation equipment had morphed into the mid-sized company with annual sales of $170 million and a workforce of 500 employees. Guess what? J.C. Huizenga did. So he sold his manufacturing company. He decided to give a little something to his employees. The Michigan businessman handed out nearly $6 million in unexpected bonuses to his 575 workers, with recent hires getting $500 and long-standing employees up to $50,000.
Wow.
The new owner was a little concerned that we didn't make the bonuses too high, he joked, because they wanted to make sure that everybody turned up for work the next day. Huizenga says more bosses should share their profits with workers. It's great to be a giver, he says. I'll take people over assets all day long. He's also a philanthropist.
Nice.
So I wanted to give a big up to J.C. Huizenga. J.C. Huizenga. I don't even know what the fuck your last name means, but yo, big up. That's amazing. That's admirable. That's awesome. Big up.
That's beautiful.
Well, this dude, I mean, Google his company. I mean, he automated. He makes pretty much robots that, like, you know, assist in manufacturing other things. The company is JR Automation Technologies, and he has a group of what is it? J.C. Automation Group. So he's got other companies, so he don't give a shit. But he's actually an entrepreneur and a philanthropist and obviously an awesome ex-boss.
Yeah.
Could you imagine that shit?
Oh, man.
50,000 bonus, I'd quit. I'd be like, yo, hold on a second. Yo, you just bought the company. I want to know what your fucking profit sharing like intentions are going to be if I'm going to stay on. You know what I mean? Because if you ain't going to match J.C. Huizenga's shit, I'm out. You know what I mean? Anyway, so the other thing I came upon this article, which was unreal, okay? So this happened just recently. So the DEA seizes $16,000 from a Midwesterner coming to L.A. to make a music video, all right?
Ridiculous.
A young man hopped on a train from Michigan, which, by the way, J.C. Huizenga's company was from Michigan, to Los Angeles, carrying $16,000 in cash and a dream of becoming a music video producer. Then the DEA decided he must be a drug dealer and took it all. So Joseph Rivers, 22, left his home in Romulus, Michigan, and boarded an Amtrak train headed west on April 15th. He switched trains in Albuquerque, the Albuquerque Journal reports. He was carrying luggage that contained, among other essentials, $16,000 in an envelope. He had raised this money with the help of his family in order to follow his dream of becoming a music video producer. He decided not to deposit it until he got to L.A. because he had experienced issues in the past trying to withdraw large sums of cash from out-of-state banks. Soon after, DEA agents also got on the train and began looking for train-riding drug traffickers. Hold on a second. At that point, I need to... I need to put that in. River said that the agents questioned passengers seemingly at random, but that he was the only passenger they decided to search. He said he was also the only black passenger in his train car. Rivers agreed to the search, not thinking anything bad would happen. When the officers found the cash, however, they took it on suspicion that it could possibly be tied in some way to drugs. Rivers told the agents that what he was really up to, even calling his mother to speak with the agents and confirm. It didn't make a difference to the DEA. I told the agents I had no money and no means to survive in LA if they took my money away. They informed me that it was my responsibility to figure out how I was going to do that, he told the Journal. They left Rivers broke in New Mexico. His dream stalled. A passenger on the train who requested to remain anonymous witnessed the incident. He helped Rivers return to Michigan and contacted reporter Jolene Gutierrez Kruger at the Albuquerque Journal to tell Rivers' story. This happens more than you might think. It's called civil asset forfeiture, and it's perfectly legal. It's a perfectly legal way that law enforcement can just take your money or property if they suspect it may be related to a crime. They don't have to prove that you're doing anything wrong or that you're running a drug trafficking ring, and they likely won't even detain or charge you. If you want your money back or your stuff back or your property, you have to prove that you're innocent. And going through that process often involves racking up legal fees, and it can take a long time. And it isn't just cash. They can take your car, your house, or anything they think you may have purchased with dirty money or used while committing crimes. If you're wondering what would have happened if Rivers had refused to let officers search his bag, it's equally negative. The officers would have been able to hold the bags until they could get a search warrant. Once the agents got the warrant, they still likely would have found and seized Rivers' cash. Since 9/11, there have been 61,998 seizures of cash amounting to over $2.5 billion. Many of the people who have had money taken from them are like Rivers, minorities. Many of them were on their way to buy a new car, business, or other major purchase when they were pulled over, searched, and had an officer whisk away their money. What gets me here is that it's perfectly legal.
Yeah.
The government can do this. I didn't know this. So, you know, a police officer could pull you over for a taillight, and by the way, how much money are you carrying? In excess of $500, you have $2,000 in cash. They can take your money away. Since when has it become illegal as a U.S. citizen to carry your own cash? It's fucking ludicrous.
It's not illegal. It's just suspect. And now your money is suspect, not you. That's the fucked up part about it, because they take the blame off of you, which you personally have rights, but your money doesn't have any rights because it's an inanimate object. Right. The problem that I have with it is that they treat the money like it is a person, because they're prosecuting it like a real person.
As we're going to find out. I'm going to play a clip, which, by the way, I'm going to play a clip from John Oliver's Last Week Tonight.
Oh, yeah.
This guy happens to be my new fucking idol. I love this dude. The guy's hilarious. If you don't know, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, it's a show on HBO. It's fucking brilliant. So I'm going to play that, and let me see if it comes up faster than I was hoping it would. Of course, as soon as I have it saved, and then it takes...
Hey, you know, keep working on that, but, you know, I think about a year ago we did a thing. Remember there was a stripper coming from Detroit to L.A. With, like, $50,000 or something that she earned.
Yep.
And that got seized because it had drug residue on it.
Right.
Because it's money that she got. So they but it's tip money from a strip club. Where do you, what do you think? People aren't going to be doing coke at a strip club. Of course that money's laced with fucking drugs. It doesn't mean she's doing drugs, but they seized that just because the money had it on there.
Right.
You know, because, you know, because the money had the Coke on, or the Coke was on the money. So
right.
It's, you know.
Well, I mean, the thing that gets me is like you said, it's money is inanimate. Your house, as you can see, if I can get this.
But
fucking
see, businesses are inanimate too. But businesses have the rights as an individual. They have individual rights.
Right. So normally, what would happen is you'd get arrested, you'd be charged with a crime, mm-hmm. and then any kind of property that you have in your possession would be taken as evidence.
Right.
So let me see if this damn thing comes up. And so with this thing, it's a completely different thing.
The police. They protect us, they serve us, and they provide us with an endless source of TV show one-liners.
Rock, paper, scissors,
gun.
Well, I'm no Serena Williams, but I know one thing. It's all in the wrist.
Who'd want to cut your penis off?
Take a number.
Okay, now, you laugh, but admit it, you want to watch the rest of that episode right now. Trust in the police is one of the most vital elements in a civilized society. But for many Americans, that trust has been undermined by a procedure called civil forfeiture. Now, I know it sounds like a Gwyneth Paltrow euphemism for divorce, but incredibly, it's actually even worse than that.
Civil asset forfeiture is really a mechanism by which the state and federal government can seize people's property without having to convict them of a crime. Most people can't afford to hire a lawyer to challenge it. It's really legalized robbery by law enforcement.
And think about it. That is a tough crime to report to the police. Give me a description of what the guy looked like. Well, to be honest, he looked a lot like the guy currently asking me what the guy looked like. And if you think this sounds bad, just wait until you see how it looks. Because the Washington Post recently published a major investigation featuring stories like that of this man, who was driving from Michigan to San Francisco with $2,400 in cash that his dad had lent him to start a new job when he was pulled over in Nevada.
I gave him my license and registration, and then as he was looking at that information, he asked me how much money I was traveling with.
Lee told him about the money his dad gave him, which he kept in the trunk.
He told me to turn on my air vents on high and roll up my windows and get out of the car because he was going to run a canine around it.
Dove didn't find drugs, but he did find the $2,400.
He said, no, I'm going to keep the money because I've concluded through my investigation here that you are traveling from Michigan to California to purchase drugs.
Wow. I mean, there is so much wrong there, including the fact that any policeman who genuinely believes you need to travel from Michigan to California to purchase drugs needs to be introduced to the concept of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Okay? It's right there. And the problem is, stories like that are surprisingly common. In fact, since 9/11, under just one program, police have taken $2.5 billion in the course of over 61,000 seizures of cash alone from people who, and this is the mind-blowing part, were not charged with a crime. That is the sort of police behavior that we laugh at other countries for, along with their accents and silly hats. The way civil forfeiture generally works is that if the police believe they have a preponderance of the evidence that suggests your property was or could be used in a crime, they may confiscate it. And it gets even weirder.
Many folks are unfamiliar with the idea of civil forfeiture, which is actually a case brought directly against a piece of property where you don't need to be proven guilty of a crime for your goods to be taken away.
Exactly. You don't need to be charged with a crime because it's not you that's on trial, it's your stuff. That's why these cases have historically had eye-catching names, such as, and all of these are real, United States versus $8,850 in U.S. currency, United States versus an article consisting of 50,000 cardboard boxes, more or less, each containing one pair of clacker balls, and United States versus approximately 64,695 pounds of shark fins, which must have been an amazing court case. And do you see those shark fins in the room right now? Yes! There they are! There they are! Let the record show the witnesses pointed at roughly 65,000 pounds of shark fins. Guilty, guilty. And it's also worth noting that your possessions generally have fewer protections under the law than you do.
Under civil forfeiture laws, your property is guilty until you prove it innocent.
How can that be possible? At this point, I'm surprised objects don't have their own civil rights leader, like Martin Scooter King or Harvey Carton of Milk. Now, to be fair, civil forfeiture laws have had some positive consequences. They've crippled powerful drug traffic organizations, thwarted criminals, and returned billions of dollars to victims. The problem is that many police departments are allowed to keep most or all of the money they seize. And knowing that starts to make you wonder about the motivations of these kinds of questions.
Is there any large amounts of cash in the vehicle?
Are there any large sums of money over $5,000 in cash in the vehicle?
How much money you got?
We got a little technical difficulty with the video. No, it's the video. It's just.
Are you large amounts of currency enough?
I'll take whatever cash you got in there. And is that a Slurpee in the cup holder? What flavour? Grape? Never mind. Do you know what? I will take it. I'll take it. The question, do you have cash in the vehicle, is surprisingly common in traffic stops, and the police are prepared to overcome any language barrier to ask it.
Tiene mucho, mucho dinero en su truck y trailer?
Fucking.
Let's be clear. He just said, Tiene mucho, mucho dinero in su truck y trailer. Which sounds like an alien's first attempt to communicate with humans after crash landing in a Taco Bell. In fact, let's all just pause for a moment to enjoy that sentence, because every single word of it is funny. First, Tenny, pronounced incorrectly. Mucho, one of the few words he knows in Spanish. Mucho, repeated word. De Niro, a famed actor. In, a rapid shift to English. Sue, rapid shift back to Spanish. Trucky trailer. Trucky trailer. It's magnificent.
Oh my God. This fucking video is just rendering, but this motherfucker is capital R to the tarted. Anyway, this fucking thing is rendering. I wanted to keep going here. Anyway, you know what? I'm just going to pause it. Because sometimes when you need YouTube to work, it doesn't work. But anyway, you guys got the idea. It's actually ludicrous what goes on with DEA agents and your fucking rights, really. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you can't buy bulbs and now you can't fucking carry cash.
Yeah.
Like cash. Like I knew that when you fly, right? That before you come into America, let's say, or before you go into another country, customs ask you to declare if you're carrying currency over $10,000. They always ask you that.
Right.
I'm not sure why that is. I'm assuming that, and I can do some research on this, I'm assuming that it's because, for instance, our government doesn't want you taking money out of our country and, you know, having some sort of, you know, offshore banking account or whatever, because they want to know quote unquote your money, their money is at all times,
or vice versa. They don't want you bringing $1 million into this country and it's not being taxed,
and it's not being taxed, right?
Or if you're taking money out of this country,
but
you know, if you're
you
making
know if
money,
it's taxed. I mean, so anyway, I mean, how do you know?
However,
you
my vice versa. What are the vice versa was of that? I lost
no,
my
no,
place.
No, I get it. Yeah. I get it. But my thing is like, for instance, when I was going to Cuba, I had to carry cash. I had to carry whatever money I was going to bring in to the country because they don't take credit cards in cash.
Right.
So that means technically I could have been asked, how many trucky trailers am I carrying? And I could have just said, I'm not sure what the question is. And then they could have just said, how much mucho, mucho dinero in your pocket bolsillo, and eventually I would have played dumb and they would have taken my money and I would have been like fucked,
right?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I didn't know this. I thought that was kind of crazy. Which by the way, there was another story here. I wish I can fucking play it if this thing fucking gets a Shiite together. There was a guy carrying I think $28,000 in cash. from one state to the other because he was in eBay and he had a copy of the eBay transaction and the whole nine yards because he was buying a car. He was basically buying a car.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they said, okay, cool. And then, and the majority of the people that have been stopped, I believe it said they were minorities, right? Because they automatically assume if you're black and you're carrying fucking anything over $5 bill, you're obviously selling drugs or some shit. You know what I mean? So, or Latino for that matter. But a couple of the examples that John Oliver showed, they were actually white dudes. And the dude I'm talking about with the $28,000 is a white dude. And he had a fucking eBay transaction slip. And he took his fucking money away. And the crazy thing is that they don't arrest you. Yeah. They just take your shit.
Yeah.
Like later on in the John Oliver thing, they say that they you know, think your house was being used for drugs or something like that. Or yeah, your house was purchased. It's not even your house was purchased with drug money. It's like the house was used for drugs or something.
They arrested the kid who had $40 worth of heroin on him. And so they took the parents' house because they said that, you know, that house was being used for selling drugs.
Right.
And
no evidence, no
that
subpoena.
That was in Philadelphia, I think.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah, man, it's ridiculous, and the real reason behind that is because who's getting the money?
Well, the interesting thing is that that whole snippet goes into it goes on to say that the local law enforcement gets to keep whatever money they seize.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's not even like it goes into some sort of court system or whatever. Let's say, you know, the sheriff's office of bumfuck Truckee, Georgia, you know, doesn't arrest you, just takes $28,000 of your money. That local precinct gets to keep it,
mm-hmm,
right? And unless you prove that it was innocent, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, eventually they get to spend it. That's the crazy thing about it.
Right.
They get to spend that money.
Yeah. Here, let me read. Civil asset forfeiture gives law enforcement the power to take property away from someone who has not been convicted of a crime. And this property can be cash, cars, homes, and anything else, like a simple gold cross that the law enforcement believes is connected to a crime. Yes, a woman had her gold cross necklace seized when she was pulled over for a minor traffic violation. And how does one go about getting a necklace or money or a car or a house back? Well, often they don't. Due process requirements don't require judicial hearings. More than 60% of federal forfeitures were uncontested over the past few years.
Wow.
Yeah. And when the property owners do get notice and muster the courage up to go against the government, they find the deck is stacked against them. Property owners bear the cost of going to court and the burden of proving their property's innocence. And almost all instances, property owners are not entitled to counsel.
Holy shit.
They're not entitled. The property should be entitled to counsel.
Right.
If they're treating the property. Since 2008, state and local police have made more than 55,000 seizures of cash and property worth $3 billion with the help of the federal government. And in 2014 alone, federal forfeiture laws were used to take in $4.5 billion. This is coming from the ACLU website.
Yeah.
ACLU is kind of stepped in, and this I believe this article is from April 20th, 2015. So it's from this year.
The thing is that civil assets forfeiture works on some level, right?
Yeah.
Because if they're like big drug cartels, you know, trafficking, you know, large forms of drugs, obviously it's a cash only business. They're going through state line, yada, yada, yada. But I don't think, you know, an average citizen should be subject to this type of shit without the local law enforcement or the federal government having to, you know, prove more than just, you know, that's drug money. We're taking it away. I mean,
if you're going to take somebody's money, somebody's personal property, I think you should have to arrest that person. The reason why they don't arrest that person is because they don't have anything on them.
They don't have any evidence.
They don't have any evidence, and they're just using that. So a kind of balance of the thing is, okay, fine. If you arrest the money, you have to arrest the person carrying the money as right. well, because the money is connected to the person who you think is doing this nefarious act.
But also, once you get into arresting somebody.
But if you arrest the person...
But
the person has the rights, and they could turn around and sue.
Of course, but once, well, you can still sue with the money, but you
you're
lawyers.
Not going to get your, yeah, you're going to lose.
Once you arrest a person, that detains or delays the whole thing, because then, in order for you to do whatever the fuck you want with the money, that has to be taken in as evidence. Whereas this doesn't have to be taken into evidence, and it does not have to be entered into any kind of court of law. You basically just hold on to it at your local precinct or wherever the fuck the DEA does, you know, the Drug Enforcement Agency in Guantanamo, wherever, the, you know, Virginia or whatever.
So here's what you do. If you're carrying a large sum of cash, like, you know, $2,500, $25,000, and the cop seizes your cash, right?
Right.
And he says, I think this is for whatever. Punch the cop in the face as hard as you can. No, punch him in the face, because you'll just get a charge for punching the cop in the face.
Here's the thing.
But then they'll have to use the money as evidence because that's why he pulled you up.
If you're carrying large sums of money, let's say anything over $1,000, put cocaine residue on it, then they have to fucking arrest you for drug trafficking, and then your money
But then you get busted for cocaine.
It's okay. But then you have a call. You call your lawyer. Your lawyer bails you out. The money now is entered into court. They find that it wasn't drug money. It was, you were actually stripping for a living.
Right.
And that,
those were
dollars that you collected in your ass crack, you know.
But it'll take you about a year to get it back, because how long did it take the strippers to get it back? About a year.
But you'll get your money back.
Right.
All right. Here's something that I read that's fucking outrageous. Okay. So last year, the TSA, right? TSA, you know those assholes at the airport that fucking check your asshole and every, you know, check
the guys that forget to turn the machine on.
Right. So last year, the TSA collected 674,841.06 in loose change at airport security checkpoints across the country.
How much was that again?
674,841.06.
That's a big ass fucking change jar,
That's
man.
That's almost $1 million. Almost $1 million. Just a little shy of $750,000, right? That they collected in loose change at airport security checkpoints. Basically, another way of putting this is that idiot air passengers left almost $750,000 in loose change
in those trays,
wherever. All right. and this is the thing. The TSA gets to keep every penny. So whatever they find, whatever's left, they get to keep, right? So in 2013, the number was $638,142.64. That was how much it was in 2013. In 2012, it was $531,395.22, okay? And in 2010, the agency raked in a mere $400,000. Now, here's the kicker. In travelers at New York's JFK Airport left the most change, totaling $42,450. This is in 1 year.
Wow.
They left the most change. Do me a favor, guys. If you travel... there's a little advice from Uncle Ness. If you travel frequently like I do, as soon as you go to the airport, take your fucking money out of your pocket, take your change, take everything and put it in a compartment in your carry-on. You know, in a zippered compartment.
Yeah.
Everyone has a laptop bag. Put all your shit there. Take your watch off. Take all that stuff in there. Keep it in one compartment. That way you know where it is. Once you go through the other side, you'll know to take it out. You'll get your watch out of there, whatever.
Simplify. Keep that shit in there the whole time.
It's very simple.
You don't need any of that stuff while you're walking through the airport.
No, but what happens is what happens is what I call the bagel with cream cheese syndrome, right? You go into the bagel shop, right? Now you're talking shit with your friend, or you're just like waiting in line, and then you wait till you get to the fucking counter to decipher what you want. And the woman says, what can I help you with? And then you'll be like, what kind of bagels do you have? You fucking asshole! You've been waiting online for an hour. You've seen the fucking board. You see what they have. Right. You know, be prepared. I mean, don't wait till the last minute for all that stuff. Anyway, that's the conclusion of our show. Let me just wrap up by saying that Rich, you're going to be leaving our show June, like in a couple of weeks. No, not yet.
Not yet.
Okay, not yet. All right. So forget that. Scratch that out. That's good.
Not yet.
Scratch that. Anyway, so make sure you go to Facebook. Like our page, Nestorius Public Radio. Go to iTunes, man. Leave a review. 5 stars, man. Take a screen grab of that shit. Email it to me at Nestorius@yahoo.com. I'll send you a t-shirt. All right? Do that. Go to iTunes. Tell your friends to subscribe to the show. You know what I mean? Make that shit happen, man. Make it poppin'. You know what I mean? Word.
Shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way long. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit.